Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist, and we come to you live every Thursday from 7 until 8, and it's Thursday, and it's 7 o'clock, and you should be in front of your computer listening to us because we talk about business, your business, the business you work for, the business you have started or would love to start. We are the place that talks to you about things like leadership, 401ks, project management, financing your company, how to get that money. And we discuss many other things, and we always do it by bringing in an expert who has their finger on the pulse, and they've done this for years, and they can talk to you about things that sometimes you haven't even imagined. There are these kinds of challenges in this sector of business. So tonight will be like always. We'll have a guest. Before I introduce my guest, I'm going to give you the number to call in if you have questions. The phone number is 516-387-1640, and the number is 516-387-1640. Before we introduce our guest, you know I never take this journey alone. You have to meet my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're in the house.
Hello, everybody, and it's great to be back again. This is Lori Miller, LGC Interior Design, and we're going to have some fun tonight on our podcast, and we're going to learn. Tonight's guest is, he's here to help us negotiate and keep expenses in check. He's founder, CEO, and president of Armano Real Estate, Joseph Armano. Joseph, please introduce yourself, tell our listeners how to reach you, what you do, how you do it, and we're going to hear all about you tonight.
Excellent. Thank you, Ted and Lori. Thank you so much for the invitation. Really looking forward to the talk tonight. So yeah, Joseph Armano, I'm CEO of Armano Real Estate. Background, I grew up where Lori did in Long Island, and started my career on Wall Street earlier on. Been doing corporate real estate for about 12 years now, mostly in the New York tri-state area, tenant focused. I live in Bronxville, New York, in Westchester, married to my lovely wife, Elizabeth, have a toddler son, Joseph William, who we adore, he's about a year and three quarters, active in the local church here, and I love to cycle. And so that's a little bit about me. We've been awfully busy in regard to real estate now, given COVID and what's going on in the market. And I can be reached at joseph@armanorealestate.com.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you so much. So my first question to you, Joseph, were you a born negotiator or is it a skill you learned?
That's a great question. That is a really good question. I can't look. I think I was born into an entrepreneurial family and had been involved in numerous business activities early on. So business development came quite, I wouldn't say it came naturally, it was necessary, but I learned that skill early on and that's been very helpful. Now in regard to negotiations, yeah, I think that's somehow innate, but when it comes to corporate real estate, that's a skill. Negotiating leases takes extensive skill and experience. You can't really do it effectively unless you know the mindset of the landlord and the needs of the tenant and how to meet those needs. It's not, leases can be complex. So it's a combination of both.
Interesting. So, I've rented space before. And yeah. I don't think I would even begin to understand how the landlords were thinking.
Yeah.
So how do you understand that? How do you get to know that?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Sometimes tenants who try to work out their leases get very frustrated and get nowhere. And then we come in and they get excellent results and they think we're like magicians. We're not. We just happen to know how to communicate with the landlords to meet some of the needs that they have. Now, the other thing is tenants, if they're already in a space and they're trying to renegotiate their lease, they don't have much leverage. So when a lease is coming due and you get a broker, a good broker involved, and there are a lot of options out there, we can leverage the market and get the landlords to talk to us. A landlord may not talk to a tenant because they're not represented and don't think the threat to leave is real. When we get involved, it brings a certain level of respect and the fact that, you know, look, this tenant may not be yours anymore if you don't take care of them.
Right. Very interesting. And did you always do real estate, or did you, like, was this a career switch?
No, you know, I started on Wall Street. I was an analyst. I worked in the private client group at Merrill Lynch, an analyst at Oppenheimer Funds. And in the early 2000s, I decided to switch. I had some interesting things going on in my life, and I wanted to do something, you know, a little more creative, not just financially oriented. And I started in residential real estate in New York City, really doing condos and a lot of new development. And eventually got into commercial and tenant representation and corporate real estate.
And that's where you are now.
And that's where I am now. I've been doing this since about 2008 or so.
Wow. And you've seen a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah, the Wall Street skill set, I got to tell you, is very, very helpful in regard to negotiations and in regard to the, you know, the financial part of a lease.
Right. Yeah, I would imagine, because it helps you to understand the bottom line figures and then also help to work with people around, you know, any money issues.
Yeah, correct. You know, as a tenant, what's really important now, especially during COVID, is you don't really know if you need the space, right? Because everyone's hybrid
right.
and working from home. But here's the thing. There are some incredible opportunities now where you can get space with landlords giving incentives and other concessions to you that you never could have had before. So it becomes economically more feasible. You know, lower security deposit, a lot of free rent to get started as you're, you know, starting up in your business, which you never would have gotten before. The landlord building out your space, or a tenant getting creative pre-built space, not having to put any money in. And even doing a shorter
right.
lease. Even doing a shorter lease. So a lot of the hang-ups of a long lease and putting money in are gone. You could basically take some pre-built space. You could take it, you know, maybe a little less space than you need and do a hybrid type workplace environment. And that's all achievable now. It would have been a little more prohibitive a couple of years back.
Right.
So those are some of the advantages that a tenant or a business owner can take advantage of in the current market conditions. Are there any others that businesses can take advantage of when it comes to negotiating their lease rental?
Oh, absolutely, Ted. So we were just talking about, you know, maybe a new business going out and acquiring new space. Again, you really need the space. It's always it's a commitment, no matter if it's shorter or you're not putting as much capital in. But mostly what we do now and what we had started doing is with the onset of COVID is restructuring leases for tenants who have already made commitments and now they need to resize or re-envision for the future market, right? So you have tenants who during the beginning of COVID weren't even using their space. Maybe had much more space than they need and were struggling financially. So in cases like that where there was a real concern about the business going forward, we would engage the landlord to actually terminate the lease, you know, pay them some money and get them out. Leverage being, if you don't do this now, your tenant may not be here and, you know, you're not going to get anything. So that's one solution. You can always sublet your space is another solution. But what most oftentimes we're working with tenants who, you know, they were financially struggling but doing okay. And they actually had plans to stay in New York City, if not the same amount of space, maybe even expand when things got better. So what do you do if you're that tenant? What you could do now, what we most often did for tenants, is start the restructuring process. Let's say a lease is coming up in 2, 3, or 4 years. We reach out to the landlord now. We would say, hey, look, things are a little rough now. What can you do now? And that would entail getting free rent, getting remodel capital, lowering their rent, to the market now versus where they signed, in return for an extension on their lease. And that's a lot of what we did. And so it's worked out very, very nicely for tenants. Other tenants decided to relocate. And in those cases, we were able to get them better deals. Sometimes on occasion would be a much better building, a brand new build out, much nicer space. Again, free rent and all those other incentives that I mentioned. And so pick up in their wellness systems and their ventilation systems. And that would help them with their future vision. So it's a real upgrade in everything for basically less money at times per square foot. So a lot of what we're doing is imaging and revisioning the tenants for their future plan.
Interesting. So let me just ask you sort of a light follow-up question. So do landlords hate seeing you come? You know how in our country, it's a litigious society.
Yeah.
So when people say, I'm going to call my lawyer, people kind of straighten up. They don't want to deal with the lawyer. So when you're called in, is that it forces the landlord to sit up straight and cross his T's and dot his I's? Do they hate seeing you come?
Yes. But, hate is – it's interesting that you say that, Ted. There's such an art to this. This is where the art form comes in. When we get involved, the landlords will reluctantly accept it. Okay? There's a level of professionalism that a tenant will need. A landlord would rather not have the broker there and deal directly with the tenant because they're going to save paying a commission, and the tenant won't be as educated and won't have as many options. So we're not exactly, but these discussions are very cordial. And the point is this: if it's not going to be me as a consultant, it'll be somebody else. But here's the point. If I don't get along with this landlord and they play hardball, which is quite often the case, almost always at the beginning and things warm up, there's a chance that this tenant's going to relocate, we'll find them something else. And then rather dealing with me, the landlord's going to have empty space. Now, if you're a landlord, what do you want? Would you rather deal with the broker and keep your tenant or face a big expense, which is empty space, having to pay a new broker to bring a tenant in, having to pay millions of dollars on occasion to refit the space for a new tenant? And we let the landlord know that. So it becomes amenable for them to deal with us, even pay us, while we get the tenant a better deal.
Interesting. So are there the flip side, what are some of the challenges, issues that the tenants or even the business owners face regarding the office space?
Yeah, so if we're looking at challenges from business owners, right? And I think a lot of it recently has been this. We don't even know what the plan is 3 or 4 years from now, right? Or even 2 years from now. And I'm trying to decide what I'm going to do. Quite often, owners don't know what the future brings, and they're kind of, in a sense, indecisive. However, for those tenants that have a good feel for the business plan, the world is their oyster. The challenges are really, how do you take advantage of the opportunity? Meaning that you're going to have a lot of excellent space out there. You're going to be getting a lot of free rent. You're going to lower your rent. You're going to get a brand new fit out, upgraded HVAC systems, perhaps a much better building, nicer view, light, water views, so things that you didn't have before. So the challenge is this: can you get your plan in order now because you have a great opportunity now? And when the tenants are able to do that and start getting their plans together and thinking it through and coming to a decision there, we're able to really work miracles.
I think it's a great service.
Success stories?
What's that, Ted?
Yeah, I agree with Laura. It's a great service. And I was asking, do you have any success stories you would like to share?
Oh, yeah. We have so many of these. And, for example, we recently relocated a company, Terry and Sandy. They were in Midtown, and their tenant, their owner wouldn't deal with them. And at first they were looking at, keeping the same amount of space, and which had been old, and the landlord wasn't really reasonable. Okay, so we wound up relocating them to a building from a top landlord, 40 Fulton Street, Renato's the landlord. So we upgraded them in regard to a Class A building. This is the one where I mentioned where they picked up beautiful light, bridge, water views, more space, better space, less money, and they saved money. So they got some free rent, and, really interestingly enough, the owner of the business lived downtown, and now she gets to walk to work. So this is it's a great service. You're right. I mean, I felt great doing this deal. I get gifts all the time from our tenants. They're just so happy because they didn't know these opportunities were out there. And so when you're able to work with someone who knows the market and can leverage it to your advantage, the world opportunity opens for tenants.
So I probably have a million questions in my head. So I was listening to you just now and talk about a Class A building.
Yeah.
I mean, is that really such a thing? I mean, here in the U.S., we grade everything, cars,
yeah.
People, Class A, even movies, B movies,
yeah, yeah,
A
yeah,
movies,
yeah.
All of this stuff, right? So is there really such a thing as Class A and Class B, and is there C, and how do
yeah,
you
yeah.
know which building is
yeah,
fits
yeah.
in which class? And I assume the cost goes along with it, A being at the top.
Ted, you're so right. You probably don't even know how spot on that your question really is. Class A doesn't mean a lot. What it is this. It's a lot of it has to do with the location of the building and the amenities. Okay, and a lot of it does have to do with the look and appearance and other features. But, a lot of buildings are Class B, for example, and they really don't look so great. But they're in Midtown South, and they're in a good area, and they do have some amenities. So, that definition, really doesn't always translate to what the rental price would be. There are a lot of it has to do with area, location, and other factors. So it's actually a great question. I said it to be simplistic, but the point being, that happened to be a very good, nice building. It was much better than the one they were in. Newer, better, again, much higher grade of amenities, meaning a brand new lobby and state-of-the-art security systems. That's part of what a Class A building gives now. And if you look at New York real estate, again, it's a great question, because these, and it's not just Class A, it's, you can call it luxury buildings or the higher grade buildings, they actually get premium rents. That's where the tenants who are going to make changes in their plan want to go. Those rents are actually increasing. It's the lower grade buildings that don't offer those amenity packages that are really suffering most. You can call it Class C or Class B or whatever, wherever it is, but they don't offer nice amenity space. For example, state-of-the-art HVAC systems, wellness systems, which the millennials and others really like. So there's a bifurcated market where the quality of the building really makes a difference in regard to rent.
So what is that? Is it One Bryant Park that's 6th Avenue and 42nd? It's supposed to be like one of the first green buildings in the city?
Yeah, that is.
Is that considered a Class A?
That's Class A. So
building?
You want to talk about something right next to that. Let me give you an example, because I represent a tenant right next to it, and how this market can differ so much. So if you look at One Vanderbilt, that's Class A, but it's brand new. You have rents there up to $300 a square foot. And I can tell you, it's a beautiful building. Again, state-of-the-art and everything, beautiful views, Bryant Park, et cetera, throughout most of the building, good landlord. And it has a lot of the features that, that tenants want in this state-of-the-art features. Now, if you go to, for example, just a building or two away, and you go to the Chrysler Building, very nice building. But it's more typical of what a Class A building would trade for. A nice building in Midtown, New York, $80, $90 or something like that. It could be priced, fairly well below. And that's really good value. And that's also a real high grade building priced above market. But you could go down not too far away and be in the 35th Street area, and you can get a $30 deal. on the side street.
And that's
Yeah. So, like, here you have it. You have, there's a big, and I just did one. I just did a $34 deal for a tenant in one of those buildings. And look, hey, landlord, you're not really offering much, and what you could offer is a good price. And that's what they need to do to compete, is compete on price. Where these other high-end buildings don't compete on price, they compete on amenities. Again, the Chrysler Building's a great building. It'll be priced at a little bit of a discount to One Vanderbilt, but that
is an old building.
It's in a
very Chrysler Building is a very old building, though.
Yeah, I like it. I got a tenant in there, and he's probably going to stay. But it is older, right? So you're not going to get a big premium price. You're absolutely correct. You'll get a above market price for Midtown. It's got a classic building, but you're not getting $200 or $300 a square foot down the block. You can look at it. You can see it right there. For a nice floor, maybe a higher floor,
So I have two questions. One is, so what New York is experiencing because of COVID, and I think it's interesting, you said Class A buildings, the luxury and greater or higher amenities, their rent is increasing. Like, that's counterintuitive. So what I want to ask you is the rest of the country, to your knowledge, having the same – is COVID having the same impact on, leases and commercial real estate in the rest of the nation? And do you work with people outside of New York?
Yes, we do. We work with tenants outside of New York. A lot of the tenants are actually New York-based, but then we'll go outside of our market as well. If you look at the country, the whole country was hit during COVID. And if you look at asking rents, they're down in New York City right now, 10% from peak, where they were 2 years ago or so. But they are stabilized now and are actually increasing a little bit. They're up 1% recently. However, that's the rent. The landlords are giving more in the way of free rent in New York, and all these tenant improvements that I mentioned, building out space, giving a brand new installation for a tenant and a new design going forward. So really the market's substantially off when you take what's known as the net effective rent into consideration. The rest of the country went down, but it came back a little sooner than New York. If you look at access data, the rest of the market has come back a little bit. It's still down, but maybe went down like 10%, but it's on the way up a few percentage points. New York is just off the bottom. And I'll give you the data for that. If you look at the 10 major cities across the country, they're 33% utilized right now. That's still very low. But if you look at New York, it's only 23. Only 23% of workers are back in the office. So New York, it's been challenging versus the rest of the country. The high end, as we discussed, Facebook did a fantastic, there are a lot of high end deals getting done. We call these trophy buildings. Ted, they're known as trophy buildings, even better than Class A, it's like A+. Those get, they still get very high rents. But the market's been hit and there's a lot of opportunity out there.
So,
and I would say, again, New York.
Dad.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Lori.
So I'm wondering, someone, like, let's say I was, the client, and I'm looking for space, and I'm a first-time entrepreneur, and I, find you, and someone recommends you, and I sit down with you, and I say, okay, you're in Manhattan, so I want to be on the Upper East Side, and I want, floor or street level in sort of maybe a brownstone type building, and I want it fitted out to my design company, right?
Yeah.
How do you say to me, and you go, well, how much, are you looking to spend, or how many feet, square feet? And I look at you and I go, I have no idea.
Yeah. That's not our typical
You're
talking right now, really looking at brownstones and some other buildings on the Upper East or the Upper West Side. And if you buy those, there are companies that are in those buildings. They're quite expensive, by the way. And The residential market in New York City is hot again. That had been hit. You know, people are back, and that market's actually rebounded fully. Okay, so that's a little different than your standard company that's looking for office space. But I hear you. That's like you know, creative uses of companies that are going into some buildings. You know, we definitely provide those services, but our typical client has maybe like, you know, 30, 40, 50 workers, 100 workers. You're talking 5, 10, 20, 30,000. We're working on deals now, 100,000 and more. And those type of buildings aren't going to work. You know, you need a couple of floors in a building or a floor or part of a floor.
So, yeah, you're more of, I guess, the open, trying to think of the word that I'm trying to think of. But, yeah, I get it. Like an empty factory building or something like that where it would be more warehouse where you can put the offices or more of the commercial buildings that you would typically think of
company. They're typical office buildings. They're typical office buildings. But when you mention Upper East Side, I guess maybe it threw me off because those would be more of like a brownstone. You're not going to really see like in the middle of a residential area. We're talking about buildings primarily in the business district. You're in downtown New York or you're in midtown New York. You're basically in the office area. And those office buildings.
How would the process go and how would you guide them toward the appropriate space for themselves?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really interesting. It depends on their plan. You know, if they want, where they want to be is primary importance. You know, do you want to be in New York? Are you looking midtown, midtown south or downtown, for example? All those markets are a little different and caters for different customers. And then a lot of it has to do with, you know, where their workers are coming in from, where they're commuting in from. So you try to find an area that works for the workforce. Then you look at the amount of space that they need, you know, what's important to them, how much space is probably the most important determinant, and how that space lays out, right? How many offices, how many workstations, hybrid work, huge. Do the people want to be assigned to their seats? Or can you go and get more efficient and do hoteling with those hoteling or shared seating where it's not assigned, but you could actually reduce the footprint. So, you know, you get a little more transient that way, but you don't need as much space. So those are the different determinants. You know, a lot of it depends on the age of the company, the culture of the company. If they're traditional, are they creative? Are they what's the company's image? But most importantly, I think you're in a day and age right now, even with technology companies taking up huge amounts of space in New York City, they don't have to. They could work from home. You need a space where people can collaborate, where you could showcase, where you could hire, where you could train people. So even if you're working from home 2 or 3 days a week, there's still a need for space. Now, the space may not be your traditional on one person in an office. It could be more meeting rooms. It could be more of what I'm mentioning is amenity space. And that's the trend. It's away from one person in a big office to an open, creative plan with offices, but with a lot of other type of space where there could be a community and socialization of the workers. And you need that, you know. It's hard to work at home and meet people and get trained and hire people without office space.
Yes, 100%. I think we all agree on that. Sure. So thank you.
I
got to tell you, sometimes I'm here and I have some space that I use, but quite often I'm home and I love my family, but it can be challenging when you're working from home. It's not ideal. I actually love when I go into the city and I show space. So those are my favorite days when I'm actually out there, and you know, I miss it, as do I think a lot of people in regard to the vibrancy of coming into an office and being around people, you know?
So what impact does like these shared office spaces, WeWork, Regus, Do you deal with that at all, or is that your competition?
It's a great question. We could, you know, our tenants on occasion will opt for that instead of, having their own space and their own lease. So in a sense, that's a substitute for what we do. Their lease term is flexible. But in this day and age, here's the thing. There isn't, I mean, given how rents have come down and there's such a concern now for safety, to be in one of those shared environments where people you don't know, and again, it's not as attractive. That model is it's on the way. It's out. You can tell the companies have gone bankrupt and have been restructured. They exist, and there's still a need for that type of space. But when you could go out now and get some reasonably priced space, have it for yourself, have the landlord pay to design it the way you want, space out the people like you like, have the privacy, have the meeting space, it's really, beneficial for the company to have its own space. Now, you know, there are some advantages to the temp space as well, but it all depends on, you know, what the company's vision and that they want to have in the market is and what the requirements are.
Okay.
Having your own space, it's very preferential to have your own space. And if you don't, one of the main issues is, do I want to go out 5 years? I don't know if we're going to be around anymore. I like the short-term lease. A lot of these landlords do short-term leases now. So again, a lot of the issues that were, really were prohibited in the past have been mitigated.
Very interesting. So COVID has opened some doors.
Oh, totally. Ed, absolutely. You know, look, landlords really want to get people back. I gave you some numbers there. So they will do what they need to do now, which they hadn't done before. You know, it's interesting. There's just these little amenities that they give now. You know, you can use our meeting space for free. They're doing what they have to do to help people get back.
Interesting.
Which is great.
So
it's great, yeah. So it's great for the tenant. It's great for the tenant.
So, you know, when I was asking if you work outside of New York, so if I had an office already in Manhattan and I wanted to open one in, let's say, San Diego, you would find me, would you find it or you would just negotiate?
Great question. I love the fact that you asked that question. If it's New York tri-state, we know this market and we have a team that will handle it internally. But when you're talking about San Diego, when we have a relationship here, what we do is we go to California. We have partners that we work with throughout the entire country. We will rely on them for their expertise in that market. But we run, like you just said, we run and do the deal, but we will partner. I'm not going to go into San Diego alone. Our company has partners in markets throughout the country and really globally. We have partners for design and workplace. So it's a best-in-class model. If we're not best-in-class, we're going to partner with a company that is to be able to deliver the service that a client needs. But there's a process, and that process doesn't change because we run the deal here.
Okay. All right. And you know, for design, you know you have to speak to Lori, right?
Lori and I have had those conversations already, Ted. So, Ted, for the 5 minutes that you weren't on the call, Lori and I were talking it up about design.
That's right.
Lori and I chatted about that.
Good. I had this other question. So I wanted to ask about California. Here's my other question is, so let's say, you know, my company benefited from COVID and I grew and I want to secure something more stable than a lease. New York is, you know, the whole world knows New York is filled with office buildings and tall buildings, skyscrapers all over.
Yep.
Instead of leasing, can I actually buy my office space? And so I don't have to buy the whole building. Can I do that?
You could, Ted. And there are many of those. Actually, I surveyed there. For example, if you go into the market and you look at 5 to 20,000 square feet of space, you have over 130 options. Many of those are buildings. And I think that's what Lori was suggesting before. We have these buildings that you can either buy or lease. They're available. But many of the other options are commercial condos. They are basically, you're taking a building that's just like an office building, and you're condoing it and selling those units. That is, you know, it's a fair part of the market. It's not generally what tenants opt for. Not-for-profits that don't pay taxes have a huge benefit in buying, as do other tenants who...
Really?
Yeah. There are other benefits. For example, obviously you get the benefit from the long-term appreciation of owning the asset, right? And I think that's what you're saying, Ted. Hey, look, should I buy versus lease? Definitely has its advantages, specifically for some tenants. But most opt not to. And I think there's a good reason not to. The outlays could be big. You have to put up a deposit, which you may not have. But even if you have it, there's, you know, condos aren't that much in the way of maintenance. But certainly if you're buying a building, you're now a landlord. There's, you'd be putting maybe $100 a foot, millions of dollars to upgrade the building, maintain it, deal with all the headaches of the HVAC and you know, all the contractors you have to deal with to run the building. And it's beyond the scope of expertise of the tenant. And quite frankly, if the market isn't going up a lot, you're tying up your capital and you have expenses coming out the door, it may not be financially, you know, viable to do that. Not only viable, it may not be the best decision. So most of the times, tenants rightfully choose to lease. It's less in the way of capital outlay. The upkeep is minimized. And you could, you know, when you own a building now, and we do know of tenants who own buildings, and they're not, they bought a building. I know of a tenant who recently purchased a building 2 years ago, barely using it now. They weren't
able,
right? So think about that. You just bought a building, and now you're only using 10% of it. You're paying for upkeep, right? That wasn't a great decision. Now, look, you would have had a lease. You've been stuck with the lease, but I got to tell you. Like I just mentioned before, there are ways to get out of a lease that you can get out of that you can't when you own a building. And you know, they may not want to sell the building in the down market, right, without a tenant in it. May not get the price that they paid. That decision to buy isn't, even though it's Manhattan real estate and will always be great long term, may not be in a tenant's interest quite often.
Right. So if I were to buy two floors, right, and each floor is 5,000 square feet, so now I have 10,000 square feet, I'm going to use it all.
Yeah.
If I were to lease it, I could ask the landlord to build it out the way I want. Is that correct?
Okay, so you're saying if you were going to – you are the landlord or you're
I want to contrast, right? So if I buy two floors and I want to build it out. I've got to pay for that. But if I lease, then at least I can ask the landlord to build it out, and I assume they'll build it out the way I want.
Bingo. In this market, you could have a landlord to build out your entire space and pick up a tab, okay? When you buy, so that's a lease. So, yeah, you're going to have to put some security deposit money up. But think about this. When you buy that condo and it's not – fit the way you need to. You have to put the down payment to the condo, right? And then you're going to be putting in millions of dollars, you know, even if it's, let's say, 10,000 square feet of space, for example, and you've got to put, you know, a decent amount per foot in there. It's a big bill.
Right. So that
you can avoid that. That's the problem. You're going to need it. Yeah. You may not need that space for 5 years. Now you just put all that money.
The flip side is if I own 10,000 square feet and I laid off 25% of my people, I could lease, and then I would end up dealing with someone like you, right? Now I could lease a percentage of my space to someone and I probably would be really flexible because I've got this, I'm still paying a mortgage.
Correct. Yeah. You know, Ted, it's when you buy in Manhattan, it generally pays to buy, right? But again, there's these other factors involved that quite often when they factor in, it's not as attractive. But yeah, there are a lot of, we know a lot of people in their, you know, they buy and they're business owners, right? And they're really over the course of 10, 15, or 20 years, that is a great decision. And to your point, even if you're not using the space and you can effectively sublease it out, you've made a good decision, right? It's not a no-brainer.
And let me ask you this. When it comes to a build-out, right? So I go, the space is, you know, whoever was in it before, they took everything out, and you know, I see a lot of concrete down and wires from the ceiling. So will they build it out to the exact specs I want or limits? Or will they say, we'll pay up to this amount, and anything over that, you're responsible? Like, how does that work?
I think you've been talking to the experts, Ted. I think you've interviewed some brokers. Very good question. There's something that's been standard in New York, which is a build to a cap. Yeah, we'll put $50 a foot in, but anything you want more than that, above that, or above our standard, we're not going to pay for. And by the way, quite often, that's a lot of money for a tenant and could be a deal breaker. When I say landlords now, if a tenant is willing to go, let's say, 7 or 10 years, they will build it, and they will absorb the entire build-out expense.
Really?
So, yeah, there'll be expenses in moving and other expenses in wiring. But what I'm saying is, they will build out your space. You don't have to be involved financially in the construction of your space to your exact specifications. That is where it's like, wow. So if you're a tenant now, you can find space. On occasion, you can get pre-built space if you want to go shorter term or if you don't need a custom build out, which is, you know, a lot of these pre-built spaces work, you know, well or equally as well, even, you know, close to having it customized. But if you really are intent on having your program achieved, you could have the landlord put the bill over, as long as you are in there for a specific period of time and paying a fair market rent.
That's interesting. So you could really exploit, I mean, if you have the capital and you really do want office space, and you can have it built to your specs, and the landlord will just go above and beyond in terms of what he'll spend on a build out, he'll go above and beyond what he normally does.
Correct. Big. That's what I mentioned. Asking rents are down, but when you start putting in all this other stuff in that the landlords are giving, they're way down. It's a net effective rent is really a lot lower. And bingo, Ted. That is spot on. That's why I love what we do, because we're able to, through leverage, maximize what we can get from the landlord to create value for the tenant. Now, look, the landlord's going to do well. You know, they have a tenant in there. They're going to keep their operating income and stabilize their building going forward. They're just looking at it as, okay, I'll take a little bit of a near-term hit to ensure that.
Right. So I have a question that I have two questions. So the first one is, so even with all of these advantages in New York, are people leaving New York and going to Connecticut and New Jersey?
Early on during the pandemic, I think you saw a flight from New York. I mean, I've never seen that before, where people were going, they were leaving New York residences to move. I have friends who moved down to Georgia. A lot of people moved to Florida. Many people moved out to the Hamptons on their summer home or Connecticut. And people were just not going to work in the city. That was part of it based on where they live. Now, there was the part that you're mentioning as well is, are you going to actually, if you have a lease in New York, since you're living in Connecticut now, are you going to relocate that office to Connecticut? A lot of tenants are leaving the state. It's a fair amount, but maybe it isn't as large as you think. There's still no lure to being in New York City. When you go through all the commuting and where everyone is most happy, it's kind of like the hub. So if you move to Connecticut and there are people coming in from Brooklyn, that's not going to work. You almost need like Connecticut and New York. It doesn't generally solve, if you have a Connecticut-centric workplace, yeah, Stanford's great, Greenwich is great. I have a good chance that tenant's going to leave New York City. But that's not the average tenant. Most tenants have people commuting in from all over, you know, Brooklyn, New Jersey, Long Island, Westchester, Connecticut, and prefer to be in Manhattan. And here's the key. In the past, Manhattan was priced so high that a lot of tenants would opt, despite the workplace issues, to leave because financially, you're going to go to Queens, you're going to get a much better deal. You know, workers deal with the commute. But Manhattan's cheaper now, cheaper relative to the suburbs too. So, you know, you can get a great deal in Manhattan, keep everybody happy. That's kind of like the plan that most tenants are opting for. Here's an interesting thing. I could not only keep my space, but grow my space by 20%. I can grow my space by 20%, grow my company at the same budget. That's what we see a lot of. You can get 20% more space. Yeah, and I keep the budget the same. Now I can hire, and I got room to grow. I could set myself up for 5 years of growth in Manhattan. Couldn't do that 2 years ago.
So let me – I'm going to put something on the table, and it's going to seem tangential at first, but it's completely related to it.
All right.
So I saw a report that talked about high school students, you know, the elementary, high school, and math scores. And there's been a huge drop in math scores since we've done the virtual classroom. So there is, and they think they also saw, since the students have returned to the class, the math scores are starting to go back up. So now if you, can we translate that sort of occurring in the student world to the corporate world where everyone is saying, well, I'd rather work at home. And I'm wondering if they're going to discover a similar impact that the school system has.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, initially we're getting a lot of pushback about, you know, you can't force people to go to an office. And
right.
We're talking about the great resignation and people are leaving because they want to work from home. But we may be, and it hasn't been reported yet, but we may be seeing the same sort of impact on performance that the students are having in math, and it's happening at work. And so we may actually go back to 100% what we call normal, but some level of hybrid. But we may have to just go right back to getting people in the office because they may be more productive and better collaborative and all the other good things that you get. Initially, I'm assuming, as you were saying, people were leaving. They're going to Georgia, Florida, Connecticut, you know, other places. And you may have occupancy rates that are low compared to normal. But do you think that analogy of the high school students dropping math scores will translate into what's happening in corporate America?
Ted, that's an excellent question. I'm really glad you asked that. I don't have the answer for you, but my gut would be yes. I think that is correct. I think that's an excellent analogy. The employer generally wants their worker in the office. If it's not going to be 5 days a week, they'll accept three or four or whatever, or even two if they have to. But they would like their worker in the office. It's just, you know, you're keeping tabs on them. They're around other people. They're learning. And there is, you know, an element of collaboration that benefits the company. I mean, it's part of what you're saying. It's
right.
The employee that's become very very comfortable at home and uncomfortable with, you know, working in the office 4 or 5 days a week, understandably, but not all of it's safety related anymore, to be honest with you. Some of it early on was safety. The employees have become comfortable and quite honestly productive at home too. It's been working. Productivity has not really been hit. But your point is like learning and all that, and will it happen? I think yes. I think the answer is yes. I think that the employers reluctantly have to give the employees what they want to attract them and keep them, which is a lot of time away from the office. But there's going to be a point when it becomes safe, and they're going to realize that these office workers aren't learning as well or collaborating as well. Their people skills aren't what they used to be. They don't know the people here. It's not as efficient. It's not as productive. I think I liked it the old way. I think that's going to happen. Ever 4 or 5. I think the cat's out of the bag with 5 days a week. People weren't going in on Friday, half day anyway. I think they're going to be back for 3 days a week or something like that, you know?
Okay.
It's not going to be like you come – I don't see like you're going to go to the office once a week or don't go at all. I just don't think that's going to work. There's going to be some middle ground here where you could – meet the employee's need, but the employer is getting what they want. I think there's a learning issue. I think when you're not just virtual learning, I think you hit the nail on the head. There's a different type of apprenticeship in an office that you don't get on a computer.
Right. So
100%.
So I have... Before I ask you a somewhat personal question, just what advice would you give tenants or businesses, business owners or CEOs in this environment? What advice do you have for them?
Yeah, as you can tell, I'm a consultant, a tenant advocate, and I think, you know, it's a business should have a consultant work with them. You can call it a broker. It's really a tenant advocate. So we're tenant only. The model works. You can't serve two masters. A lot of the brokers in New York City have, large as landlords as their customers on a corporate level. And then you're trying to represent tenants as well, sometimes even in the same building. How do you effectively represent two customers? I mean, you may love one and not love the other as much. So we're tenant only. We like this model. We think if you were to work with a good advocate, whoever that person may be, there's just incredible value that you're going to create. So we certainly don't think you should do it alone, especially if it's a larger deal. You know, if it's going to be a 2 or 3 person deal and it's very short term, I get that, especially if you're just going to do temp space. But if you're starting to make a commitment and you're looking at your future vision for your company, where hiring becomes important, where locking in long-term rates, that lease becomes part of your business decision. In fact, that'll be part of the business valuation, whether it's below market or above market. You should get a broker.
Interesting.
Yeah. The valuations that are part, the lease is part of, it's not just the face rent. There's the work and the free rent and these escalations. It's like surgery for us at times where – I don't know, you know, you wouldn't go and represent yourself in a courtroom or operate on yourself. For some reason, people think they can do their own lease, but it's taken me and my team. I have teammates who've done this for, you know, many, many years, and I still rely on them. What's this clause? How do you write that clause? I think you should have a broker, and you'd be shocked. I think people don't know the value sometimes, so they think they can do it on their own because it's a $50 rent. There's all these other parts. It could be 40% of a lease deal or more, which isn't just the amount of rent that you're paying.
Okay.
And you start adding that value up over 10, 15 years, it's a lot of money.
Great advice.
Personal guarantees, what if they, you know, there are a lot of things we get, giving a guarantee, for example, quite often we get tenants out of a personal guarantee. That's a big thing. Something goes wrong, they come after your house. You don't want that.
Right. Okay. So, you're a man of faith, so
yes.
Can you talk about how does your faith impact your business?
It really does, Ted. I'm really glad that you asked that. It impacts everything I do. I think there's an element of when you're serving God that you serve others as well as you can. It's all part of the work we do. Again, a lot of this is service. To others and using skill sets that we have for our clients' best interest. And a lot of it is being able to do that in a way that's honest, truthful. Quite often, in my business, people, like I said, they may be playing different sides of something and you're not getting the best advice that you can get. So we try to be different in that respect, even if it's a means a hit to our bottom line. We like to think that we're serving our customers in the best way possible, with integrity. That's how we can show love for our client and our fellow man, right? By helping them out in this particular situation, which now is important as it's a challenge in the market, you know, regarding, you know, space. So it's a big part of what we do, and I'm really glad you asked that question.
Great answer. And if people would like to contact you, how do they do that?
It's joseph@armanorealestate.com. Love to be of help. We do lease reviews at no fee. One of the things we like to do is, you know, we give to get. So we'll help, you know, help with a space program or a lease review, no fee, so that you can better understand what the value is. And that's basically how we've been building this business. It's one client at a time. Now it's multiple deals with our existing clients and through referrals.
Very good. Lori, I think you wanted to say or ask something.
No, I think you did. I was going to say we have like 3 minutes left. So I was going to ask, you know, Joseph to give his information again and, you know, but you just did that. So
I want to thank my fellow workers. I got to thank my family, my wife Elizabeth, who's fantastic. She's very helpful as we started up. Evan Elias, who's been with me a long time. So, and we got a good team. It's not, by the way, it's not just me. We have a full team of thought leaders, you know, designers, architects, financial analysts, other brokers in different markets. And so we're a whole team of people.
That's awesome.
Very good.
It's very awesome. Thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate the time. Ted, you've been such a great friend, long time. I've known you for many years. I continue to do the great work that you're doing. I think this is a fantastic program, and I look forward to staying in touch.
No, my pleasure. It's been definitely a pleasure over the years. And I must have met you early on in your career. I think we met around 2009, and you said you started in this in 2008, so I've known you from the beginning.
One of the reasons I came on here is, as I was starting out, so the people know, Ted was hosting a CEO roundtable. He was always one of the most helpful people in having us making introductions to CEOs of various companies. I would sit in on his meeting. Ted, I got to tell you, this is where a lot of that goodwill has just been years and years, and I want to thank you for that, and thank you once again for letting me on your show.
Pleasure, man. Great job. No. Very informative. You shine light on a lot of things, so really good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Be well.
Perfect. Right. Thank you. Have a good night. Everyone, we'll see you next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.